This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN, Bob the Books, Dave Ross, and Jensen Lewis coming at you. I'm right here at the Mint Gaming Hall, Franklin, Kentucky. Our clothes are on the road in Pennsylvania today. Jensen, we always look forward to those conversations, talking some baseball with CJ Nikowski. Does a great job, Atlanta Braves TV color analyst. Of course, pitched in this game like you did, Jensen, for quite a long time. Give him a follow on X at CJ Nikowski, and does great work at MLB Network Radio as well. Joins us here in the Progressive Guest Line. CJ, I've been joking with Jensen that he needs to get that right arm ready because everybody needs bullpen help at this time of the year before the deadline. What about your left arm? Can you get that thing loose?
Yeah, nothing gets me more anxiety than when people start asking me. I get fans like, when the Braves get a little bit thin, do you still have something left in the tank? No. And even at my peak, I don't think I could help this team right now anyway. I start to feel it in the rotator cuff, the pain, that residual pain from all the years. So the answer is a hard no. I'm just trying to get through my last kid who's getting ready to go to college enough to be able to play catch with him and get him on his way.
Yeah, and get the sourdough business up and running, too.
That's right.
And by the way, Dave, you have to get CJ to send you a loaf, one of the best of the business on that front. Team, CJ, at the beginning of the year that was as good as it gets, right? Offensively, just really, really good. Then the injuries started to mount. Ronald Acuña Jr. goes down for a couple of times. What has been attributed to their bounce back in your eyes? What has been so key for them to now lengthen this division lead back out to 7 games?
Yeah, so it was interesting. At the beginning of the year, they were crushing it and winning some games, quite honestly. At the end of the game, you'd walk away and go, man, I can't believe they pulled that one off. But they did. They found a way. All close games, clutch games, length of lineup was big for this team as well. Then that started to slow down. They're starting to get it back now here a little bit. Certainly has been good to get Ronald back in the lineup. That is a big one. We know that. It seems like maybe getting to the fastballs a little bit more, which is a good sign. There were some struggles there early on, but he hits a home run against the fastball yesterday, which I think was some really good news and encouraging news. It's a little bit of everything, you know, because at times the starting pitching struggles to get deep in games, and then you push on the bullpen a little bit more, and the bullpen has been excellent. And then you get a Chris Sale start where he gets you a little bit deeper in a game. That seems to work out really well anytime he is on the mound. A lot of clutch hitting. It's not one necessarily thing that you point to. I think one of the things about this team is that they have been so deep. They went through a period where it was a different guy every night kind of coming through with a big hit. For a while there, it was Dom Smith. It seems like it's Dom Smith again now coming up in some pretty big spots. It seemed like Jorge Mateo or Eli White, all these kind of bench pieces were put in the right place at the right time. Jim Jarvis, who's been a good story. So it hasn't been, which is a good thing, where you're leaning on just a couple of guys or just, you know, one or two parts of your team. It really has been a pretty collective effort, including the defense. The defense has been excellent as well for this team.
CJ, it was a great point that Jensen made the other day on this program about if they can get through the Dodgers, and it's not easy to get through the Dodgers, and if that's who you're going to face potentially down the road somewhere to win the pennant. They're 5-1 to win the pennant, but 10-1 to win the World Series, that they could very well be the favorites no matter who came out of the American League. Like, that's how good the National League is. It's top heavy, obviously, maybe with the big three being the Brewers, the Braves, and the Dodgers. As they are currently constructed in your eyes, are the Braves good enough now with good health and getting that pitching back to be good enough to topple the Dodgers, or do you think that Alex Anthopoulos has to be active here before the trade deadline?
I think he will be active. I think he wants to be active. I think if you look at some of the history after they won the World Series in 21 and kind of what happened to this team in the postseason, it seems starting pitching in particular ended up not being available the way they needed it to be when they got to the postseason. There were some injuries, thinking about Max Fried and Spencer Strider, and Strider, of course, is hurt now. Max Fried has moved on to the New York Yankees. There's been some other pieces along the way where they just have not had what they needed. 2 years ago with Chris Sale not available when they played the San Diego Padres in that first round. So I think depth of starting pitching is something that would make Alex and everybody else here in Braves country feel a little bit better about their chances. We know that the Dodgers, and we saw it last year with their run, can be really flush with starting pitching to the point where they were putting some of those guys in the bullpen. It does seem like maybe there's a little bit more starting pitching available at the deadline this year. Wasn't great last year. It's very difficult to acquire. It gets expensive. But Alex Anthopoulos has said it multiple times, playoff starter seems to be where the main focus is. There's some other pieces as well, certainly, that they could use. But to your point and your question, thinking about the Dodgers and even the Brewers, as good as they are and as pesky as they can be, and other teams as well, I think depth of starting pitching, a playoff starter that you feel comfortable putting in that two or three spot behind Chris Sale, I think is something they very much need.
Do you feel that the Phillies still have a run in them, CJ, in the East? And we know that Dave Dombrowski, Preston Mattingly going to be manning the phones trying to make an all-in move themselves. Is it too much to overcome for Philadelphia in this division? And would you put any stock potentially in a Miami or a Washington to find their way into the postseason? I know you watch this division every single day. Kind of your handicap on where you see the other National League East teams and what they're capable of.
It's been a little bit of a surprise to see the Phillies struggle here all of a sudden, right? The Braves were up 10.5 really quickly at the beginning of the year, and you felt like, are they just going to cruise? But we all know there's a long way to go in the season. They end up firing Rob Thompson. They bring in Don Mattingly, have him take over right around the time Zach Wheeler got healthy. And they went on an unbelievable run. They probably need some help as well. What scares me a little bit about the Phillies is Dave Dombrowski is not afraid to make a big move, right? And so I could see them going out and getting another big starter. And then you talk about putting together a playoff caliber rotation, and the Philadelphia Phillies could have that really quickly. They need some offensive help as well. They need help in the outfield. That's kind of been a steady story for them over the last couple of years. But I think they will be aggressive. I think they're absolutely a threat. You can't take them lightly. The Braves and the Phillies still have 7 games head-to-head the rest of the way. The Braves were fortunate. They caught them at the beginning of the season when they were not playing well. And so the head-to-head really went in the favor of the Atlanta Braves. But they're a different team now going forward. So nobody is taking them lightly. The Nationals can flat-out hit, right? This is one of the best lineups in all of Major League Baseball. We know the pitching has been a little bit light. We'll see what they do at the deadline, right? They pick up Connelly early. Foster Griffin, who's going to go tonight against the Atlanta Braves, has been a huge story. He's a free agent at the end of the year. If they can't get him extended, do they go out and they try to get what would be probably a pretty good return for Griffin? Or do they keep him because they're so light in pitching? So it's a tougher read on the Nationals, right? Do they stick to the game plan that they had all along where they know they're still another year away? Or do they try to take advantage of what has been an unbelievable offense? I think the Marlins probably still fall a little bit short. But what a turnaround it was, and then the struggles, and then they go out and they sweep the Philadelphia Phillies. They're a tough read. They really are, because they also have a big piece in Sandy Alcantara, I think, that they would do really well on at the deadline again. But I don't know if they're going to pull that trigger or not. So they're a little bit more difficult to figure out. I don't think they hang in there and find themselves in the postseason, but they're pesky, and they're a team that you cannot take for granted.
CJ, you mentioned the return of Ronald Acuña Jr. here to the Braves lineup, and we know that when he's healthy, he's an MVP caliber type talent every year. Is he still that guy when you watch him? Because I think sometimes people go out of sight, out of mind. You forget what type of impact player he can be, obviously not just with the power, but with the speed on the base pass. Is he still the same Ronald Acuña Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, forget him at your own peril, I think, is a mistake. Now, was he all the way back? Probably not quite completely there. I think they were very careful and a little bit more deliberate when they brought him back this last time, right? There's been lower body injuries that have been an issue for him over the last couple of years, and his legs, and we know how important his legs are and his ability to steal bases, the way he runs the bases, the way he covers ground in the outfield. I think he is getting there. I don't think he's all the way back. I think there's definitely still more in the tank for Ronald. I think he takes it personally, too. There have been a couple of at-bats since he has been back that I noted during the broadcast where pitchers were just attacking him with fastballs, challenging him as almost to say that I don't think you can get to this pitch. And he was having a hard time getting to respectable fastballs middle and up in the zone. He can get to stuff down. He can get to spin. I think that's probably the last piece. Again, he hits a home run yesterday, getting a little bit closer, but it was also on a two-seamer, right? So that two-seamer is going to come down a little bit and play better into his bat path. That final thing for me is once he can show you that he can get to that fastball middle up that's got a little something behind it, that's when you have to watch out. I think it's a real small adjustment that should be coming here pretty soon.
All right. You have a big fan in Dave Ross on the afternoons coming home from the driving range, listening to you and Spilly traditionally on Loud Outs on the weekdays there, Sirius Channel 89. I know I've had conversations with you, CJ, about what to make of the American League. I give you the floor. If you had to hitch your wagon to a team right now and you think that they are not only viable to get in, but to make a deep run, who is that team for you right now in the American League?
Yeah, it's not easy. It's been interesting. I think as far as the American League West goes right now, it's a crapshoot, and teams just trying to keep their head above 500 by a couple of games. We'll see what their deadlines look like, especially for, you know, the Mariners, who had a run last year. It's been disappointing. You know, we know, of course, the Texas Rangers, the Astros are mounting a comeback as well. That's a tougher division to really rally behind any of those teams. The Central has been fascinating as well as far as what the White Sox are doing. And it does sound like they're going to be active and try to really upgrade their team. We'll see what their deadline looks like. But I think your two best teams are coming out of the American League West and the ones that you have to worry about the most. And that's the Tampa Bay Rays and the New York Yankees. And while the Yankees are always in the headlines and we're always talking about what's wrong with the New York Yankees, what is scary, I think, for opponents is what they can do with that starting rotation. Right, that starting rotation runs really deep when it is right, and that's the kind of rotation that can carry you throughout a World Series. We'll see whether or not they get Aaron Judge and Stanton back and eventually Cody Bellinger right. Those are huge pieces right now that are on the IL that are still a little bit of ways away before they become active. So everybody has their question marks, I think, in their warts. There's no real strong favorite for me. I think the deadline becomes that much more important for these kind of fringe teams like the Rangers and like the Chicago White Sox, who you look at. I think in the White Sox, it's a surprise team with the Rangers. It's not a great record, but could they make those one or two moves that then puts them in a much better position to have a legitimate run at another ring in the case of the Texas Rangers? So it's a tough one, man. And the Rays just, you know, continue to find ways in what they do with their lineup and the way that they work it. I think they'll be somewhat active as well. I don't know if I buy into them being in on Skubal. That would be pretty incredible because I just don't know if they're willing to give up what it's going to take. But they'll do something. They'll have that move that we all look at like, wait, what? That guy? And then all of a sudden that guy goes on a run and ends up carrying it, right? They just do it year in and year out. So you can never take them lightly. I make the mistake often of doing it with the Rays and kind of overlooking them. And a lot of that has to do with the lack of star power, but they run an unbelievable tight ship over there. So I think it's the top two teams in the American League right now that are the biggest problem.
Jensen's right. I love listening to you guys once I get off that golf course and get some good baseball talk with you guys on MLB Network Radio. CJ, appreciate the time as always, man. Great to catch up. Best of luck to the Braves. Enjoy that stretch run. It should be a lot of fun in the second half of this baseball season. Going to talk some football here. Put the Raiders under the microscope. That's next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Today is it. It's the last day to lock in that early bird pricing on our football special. It's $175. Going to run you through the Super Bowl in February before it does go up in price point to $199 tomorrow. So why wait? Just get it today for $175. Preseason football, it's going to be starting on Thursday, so it's right around the corner. Instant access to our NFL betting guide, futures, win totals, divisional races, player props. On Monday, we're going to release our college football betting guide. That's going to preview all 138 FBS teams, preseason power ratings, and best bets from all of our VSiN experts. You're also going to get the Fantasy Life Fantasy Football Guide with over 425 player profiles, projections, and rankings, plus VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl daily best bets, real-time betting splits, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. So again, today is the final day before it goes up in price from $175 to $199, head over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. Lock in that special for the season. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Great having CJ Nikowski on in the last segment. Please like, subscribe to VSiN by the Books podcast. Take a listen on your time. Lou Finocchiaro is going to join the program in the next segment, talk all things UFC Belgrade. But let's go back out to the mothership right there in Las Vegas, and let's break down the Raiders in today's edition of the Daily Gridiron.
This is the Daily Gridiron.
You know, Jensen, we ran some sound earlier in the show from Kurt Cignetti from Indiana. You know, we don't bitch and moan and whine about things. I wonder if that's rubbed off on a guy like Fernando Mendoza as the number one pick here with the Raiders. And, you know, if he's got to sit his time a little bit behind KCA, Kirk Cousins, he doesn't seem like the type of guy that's going to be that ornery about it, right? He's going to wait for his time to come. And when it comes, I think he's going to be as prepared as you can imagine. When you have that college pedigree, do you take that into account? Again, it's a different game. We get it. The speed of the NFL is different from college football. But knowing where he's coming from and who he played under, I think if you're a Raider backer, you got to kind of like what you might potentially see out of your number one pick in the NFL draft.
Well, and to think that the coach quarterback marriage is one that we always handicap in any season, regardless if it's your first or if you're a wily veteran, I think the writing was on the wall. When the Raiders let Pete Carroll go and they hired Clint Kubiak, this kind of felt like you wanted to marry a wizard with the protege. And it certainly feels as though once this gets to be on the field for Fernando Mendoza, in whatever week it happens, you would imagine they'll get his feet wet sometime this year. It may not be early, and that's okay. But the head coach hire was probably in synergy with knowing that they were going to get Fernando Mendoza number one overall. I would say you look at not only the coach overhaul there at the head position, but when you look at kind of where their offseason was, Dave, it was a lot of the trenches, right? They go get Tyler Linderbaum as the highest paid center. 3 years, $81 million with 60 guaranteed. You go bolster that defense and the linebacking group with Quay Walker and N'Kobe Dean and Ed Rudger and Quiddy Pay. And then also bringing in a veteran in Jalen Naylor, right, on the receiving core to help out Kirk Cousins there. So you can tell what they wanted to do. Obviously, after the first overall selection for Mendoza, round two, you get Trayden Stoops, the quarterback from Arizona, another edge rusher in Kieron Crawford from Auburn, and Trey Zune III from Texas A&M. So they did a really good job in the draft. They really were aggressive, I think, in free agency to do and bolster what they needed to offensively. This is an intriguing club. Now, I'll ask you, because it feels like we do this a lot, when you look at this club in the early part of the schedule, it's pretty daunting, even if it's Kirk Cousins who's going to be the starter there. Outside of Miami, in week one, the Chargers defense, having to go to New Orleans, always a tough place to win. You got to go to Arrowhead, and then you'll have the Chiefs at home against what we believe would be Kirk Cousins. Then you got to go to Foxborough and home against the Bills. The first 6 weeks, man, we talk a lot of survivor mapping out on this show. I don't know if you want to try and sneak the Raiders through in week one against the Dolphins, but that might be a good zig versus zag spot. Ooh. Because outside of that, where else do you play them, if at all, just knowing this is still a transition year and year one of Clint Kubiak?
I can hear the inner voicings of Gil Alexander. Like, it's not Circus Survivor. You're trying to win. And if you're trying to win, then you might want to take that shot against the Dolphins in week one. I'm not as bold, Gil, to do that, because I'm a little bit higher on the Dolphins than other people are. But that mentality that you brought to the table, Jensen, is the right mentality. That would be the spot to try to make that quote-unquote advantage play. Like, I did it last year with the Colts when nobody was talking about the Colts, ironically against the Dolphins in week one, and I felt like, boy, I was getting them out early, and I didn't know they were going to start off 7-1, but they were about to pick them in that game, if you remember, in week one a year ago. So to your point, Jensen, that would be the same type of thinking here to kind of get them through. That's what I was trying to do with the Colts last year. So I love that mentality. I don't know that I would be that bold in week one. But I would say this, guilty as charged on this team a year ago. I didn't have any tickets on them, but I was rooting for them. I wanted to see what Pete Carroll could do. And then I saw what he did. And I always kind of joked, find somebody that loves somebody as much as he loves Geno Smith, right? Bringing in Geno, and he kind of brought back the old gang together. And then you draft a running back, which some people thought might have been a little bit too high, in Ashton Jeanty, and it did not work out. So now all of a sudden, you've kind of flipped the quarterback room. Yes, Aiden O'Connell's still there as a third-string quarterback, but out with the old and Geno Smith. We'll find out what he's going to be able to do in New York this year. and in with the new. Yeah, Kirk Cousins is not in with the new, but still new for Vegas. And clearly they have a track plan as to why Kirk Cousins is in. Like, you didn't know why Geno Smith was in. It's because I think Pete really thought he could win big with Geno Smith in 2025, and that was a mistake. I don't think anybody has those visions of grandeur in 2026 for the Raiders. It's to get the kid ready. It's to get Mendoza ready. And Kirk's cool with that. The kid's cool with that. And the new head coach is cool with that. So they have a plan this year that feels a lot better than the plan they had a year ago. Boy, I still think there's holes on this football team, but they do feel better right away. Now, to the Genty point, Jensen, when you have a new regime that's taking over, now you got to prove yourself all over again in year number two. So, like, that's what I'm going to be looking at. How much is this about Mendoza long term and or the other guy in that backfield that is Ashton Genty? And he's got to look a lot. He look okay. He's got to look good at least in year two to feel like at least that part of the brain trust got it right a year ago. And now we're in with the new brain trust. And let's see what that looks like. Man, past that spot in week one, though, Jensen, to answer your first question, I don't know where you go because you're not going, I don't think, on the road against the Chargers or Saints. Certainly, you don't want to back them against a team that owns them, theoretically, in the Chiefs. And then to New England and Buffalo comes in. Good luck, man. I don't know where else, if it's not the Dolphins in week one, that you might look to make an advantage play, because it really doesn't exist in the schedule until maybe the extreme back end against the Titans. And I think you know that I'm higher on the Titans than most other people are. Boy, you might really have to hold your nose in week one and hope they can get by the Dolphins there.
All right, so with that in mind, the playing against part here, I think it's going to be a pretty popular path early until we know kind of what the synergy is between Kirk Cousins and Clint Kubiak, and I am anxious to see what this revamped defense will look like too. And if you get a healthy Max Crosby going in there, you know, with the other additions that they made, especially in the linebacking room, interesting point here. It would be a spot I would like to back the Chargers early, because boy, haven't we seen LA later in the year where it is really dicey trying to back them. So that might be a math problem to work out. Like, where is that just plus EV opportunity that you feel outside of week one that you could take the Raiders and feel good? I know everyone would circle week eight at the Jets. You think the Jets are going to be bad. Maybe week 12 at the Browns. Who knows what's the quarterback situation is there. But now you're getting to later in the year where the elements play a big part of that. I mean, it you may have to try and thread the needle early in week one until we really know what that known commodity of this team really is.
You know, one other dynamic I just want to throw out there, and we talked a little bit about it earlier in the week, that Jerry Jones had mentioned that he was talking to some GMs and other owners in the league. I wonder if that would be Mark Davis in maybe a Crosby-type move. Look, they did try to make the move, remember that, to the Ravens, and then he failed the physical. I'm putting that in bunny ears if you're watching here on FanDuel Sports Network YouTube TV. Or they just didn't want to go through with the trade. I'm not sure, because he seems to be fine now that he's back in Las Vegas, Jensen. I think the knee seems to be just okay here to get him ready for week one. So interesting to watch there, that the dynamic of Max Crosby. And I'll never forget, when I was leaving town last year to get here to Kentucky-Tennessee border, there were like goodbye tributes to Max Crosby and like, you know, how much he loves Las Vegas. Well, he's back, people. So let's see what that synergy looks like now that Max is, at least for now, back with the silver and black. Lou Finocchiaro is back next, talking all things UFC Belgrade right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We're getting up early again for the UFC, going overseas to UFC in Serbia for UFC Belgrade tomorrow. Jensen Lewis, Dave Ross here with you on VSiN by the Books. And Jensen, that means we got to get to our guy, Lou Finocchiaro. Does an amazing job here in the network. Also, the About Business podcast, the Sneak Teep podcast. And give him a follow on X, a tremendous follow, at GamLou. And joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Good morning to you, Lou. Will you be setting again the alarms? I'm so bad at the time difference and the time changes. But the UFC seems to have really good success, Lou, by going overseas with some of these cards.
the morning setup, especially this time of year, which allows me to then take in the most of the Saratoga race card, which is a focus of mine this time of year. So I appreciate the UFC, sceduling some of these offshore fight cards for us.
No question. The other thing they do really well, Lou, and I take pride in my Vanderbilt education with pronunciations and things. I'm not even going to attempt some of these names in the Serbian and the Chechen names. So I'm going to give the expert the floor here. Let's start with the main card. Value for you in the main event anywhere, and how would you handicap it knowing what this setup will be like?
Value. That's going to be a tough one for me to try and address on this card, guys. I'll do my best. I don't know how I can find value on a guy that's 39 years old, spent 8 months in prison, didn't get a chance to really work out. Okay, yeah, you can do a few chin-ups and push-ups. But more than anything from what I've talked about is nutrition. And so he comes in as a big underdog. He's older than Medic, who is the native Serbian. And so everything seems set for Medic. I just have really been real diligent about not taking fighters 6 or 7 years older than another. And so this is a fight I hate to sidestep, but I have to. I there's no value in Medic. It's set up for him. Maybe you look at a total, but I don't have a strong read on that main card.
Well, on that main that's event. Exactly what. Yeah, I was going to ask you the same, a similar question to Jensen's in that, you know, we talked about it on First Strike with Rob Moreno, shameless plug, wherever you get your podcast, please listen to that as well. How do you handicap a guy that's been in prison for 8 months? It was, for those that are unaware about this, it was for, found some cannabis in his backpack, and then you get stuck in a Tijuana prison, and then you get let out. Now we got to go over to Belgrade for this first card here in Serbia, and you're going to be, you would assume what they're doing is not to say a punching bag for Uroš Medic, but that's why you are there in this main event. You would think for Medic to look good. Now, he gets his work done early, Medic does, and a lot of his, I believe, 5 finishes here in the first round. You can find that total sitting at 1.5, Lou. Would you be interested and seeing if D-Rod can at least get out of that first round, about $1.05 for the fight to start round 2. Is that anything that would interest you? Or is it really just to stay away because you do not know the conditioning of D-Rod?
It's pretty scary, Dave, when you start to predict my moves. And yeah, I am interested in the fight to start round 2 at -105. And the way I'm going to approach it is I'm going to put it in a parlay with an upcoming card. Listen, Mackenzie Dern is going to mop the floor with Jillian Robertson in UFC 330. We have parlays with her at -198. She's now -250. But if you take Medic and D-Rod to start round 2, -105, Dern -250, you get a +173. That's a play for me. I was going to use it as my bomb with Jensen at the end of the segment. Because that's really that's how I feel like I can derive some value out of that main event.
Okay, very good. Anywhere else on the main card that jumps out to you, though, Lou, whether it be just straight up that you like, method of victory, any angle that really has popped for you on the main side?
Yeah, the main card, I'm interested in Błachowicz, but again, we got an older fighter. These are due diligence fights. Is Klein and Musayev on the main card? That's the one thing I have a lot of these fights. I can look at your graphic. And okay, so let's go to Jancic and Gagnon. This Frenchman Gagnon shows up at a +375. Now he's -115. So if I want to speak about value, I'd be surely pointing us towards Jancic. I can't, though. I think I believe in the Gagnon side. I missed the bus. But if you want to try some little parlay, you know, first fight out of the card, you can go that way. I think Sepo just completely rolls Urbina. That's the fight where Urbina's in there just to be a punching bag for this local, in my opinion. And maybe the most competitive fight on the main card might be Todorovic and Valentin. Two guys that are going to go out there and rock 'em, sock 'em robots.
Oh, by the way, I love the handicap on the Cipo side. I do think that's exactly right against Urbina. I know we don't like to lay those type of price points here, but it could be a parlay piece because I don't see any danger on that other side either. I wanted to ask you about that co-main. You mentioned Jan Błachowicz back in there against the younger fighter in Navajo Sterling. And I'm going to do something. I asked you to try to handicap D-Rod being in prison for 8 months. Now I want you to get into the head of the young Navajo Sterling, who was on a bender in Tokyo when he got asked to come in and fight this fight, Lou. And he said, sure, I'll sober up and go fight this guy in Belgrade. Like, how in the world can we lay 360 on a kid that's been having a whole lot of fun and now has got to go fight an old professional now in Jan Błachowicz?
Yeah, I think it's tough. And if Jan wasn't 42 and 15 years older than him, I'd be doing Jan push-ups all over this show. I think rather I take the over in the fight or the fight to go the distance. You're not going to get Jan out of there, and I'm not sure if Jan can get Sterling out of there.
That's hysterical. I'm trying to envision the hangover, the original, and seeing one of those boys come back and try and get the octagon. Just hysterical to think about. Okay, a preliminary card here for you, Lou. A couple of spots that you might like and some intrigue there of what you see stand out.
I'm not often fearful, guys, but last week I came out and took a well-rounded striker that I thought was going to be able to get into a fist fight with a wrestler, and I was foolish. They're fighting in the heart of the Muslim territory, Abu Dhabi, and that's where they're going to accept wrestlers. Now, I finally, a week late, get the wrestling light bulb go off. I really like Musayev against Ludovic Klein. Ludovic Klein hasn't been out of the first round in a long time. Musayev has good power. He's primarily a striker, but he can wrestle. And I think this fight does go into the second round. And when it does, I think Ludovic Klein is blown up, overhyped, and totally overpriced in this fight. And Musayev is surely someone that I like in this fight, plus 215. Oh, by the way, he opened plus 110. So to me, I see value in that play. Musayev plus the 3.5 points in the fight, in a fight line 2.5 rounds to the over, is a minus 110. I'm probably going to use both of those aspects on Musayev. And I could be missing the train. I could be getting on the wrestler when it's the striker's turn. I was backwards last week. It may continue this week, but I have to do my own handicapping, and Musayev sticks out.
By the way, two fights so far in the UFC, really good opponents that he's fought here, 1-1 in that early stint. I do love Ludovic Klein, though. I will say that, Lou. I think you're referring to last week with Mike Davis. And Mike Davis, the American that went all the way over there to fight that fight, Lou, he had some very interesting comments after the fight, too, about, like, he didn't do any damage. I didn't think you were on the wrong side there. He just wasn't allowed to get off his offense, right? And he's like, hey, wait, I thought that this was what the UFC was trying to get out of guys, shall we say, as he said, humping my leg instead of actually getting into a fight. Did you understand what Mike Davis was saying? Because I kind of did.
I said it before him. I felt the exact same way. Listen, when you take Aliyev and take him out of Abu Dhabi and make him fight somewhere else in Mexico, Brazil, he's not going to win a fight doing that. He put no damage on Mike Davis whatsoever. Now, Mike Davis, for his part's been a little bit of a disappointment. I was high on him. He hasn't shown himself to be what everyone thought, especially the UFC. So everybody learns. But the discrimination against the wrestler grappler is great, except when they go to Abu Dhabi, and I should have pulled my head out of my rear end in time enough to see that.
Yeah, there's some. It was definitely some home cooking going on in that part of the world last week in some of those matchups. Lou, you're the best. We're thinking about you each and every day. Can't wait for football season as well to begin, because I know you're going to have some fun plays and some really profitable spots that you brought to the table last year here with some of those teaser plays that you had a year ago. Can't wait to do that again this year. Lou, you're the best. Everybody give him a follow at Gamble Lou. Check out the podcast, the Bout Business Podcast, and the Sneak Teeth Pod, each and every week. We're coming back with our best bets. They're straight ahead right here on VSiN by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back. VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here. Hopefully you've been checking out the Circus Survivor documentary, Jensen. It's been absolutely fantastic. You and I kind of lived through it on the network last year, and you can relive all the drama from a year ago. This week's episode was called The Turning Point for very good reason. If you remember week five from a year ago, first time in Circus Survivor history, the number one pick of the week went down in flames on a Thursday night. Yeah, I was caught up in that action as well, Jensen. And the chaos that follows is unlike anything the contest has ever seen. By the time week 6 through 9 play out, the contenders separate from the pretenders, and the pressure gets very, very real. $18.7 million on the line. Watch the next episode Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern on VSiN. And if you want to catch up on the episodes, you can do that. Episodes 1 and 2 are on YouTube right now. All you have to do is search VSiN Live and catch up on that drama. I can't wait for this year's drama. Hopefully I can make it further than week 5, like me and my boy John Chu got knocked out in the chaos that is being documented right there in this week's episode. Gents, it's been a lot of fun too, having by the books at VSiN.com for some of our watchers and listeners to be able to reach out to us. And they've been doing that, and it's been a lot of fun getting some of these queries. Do you have one today? And again, people, we kind of got one that was kidding. What else do you guys want to ask for? Your first name, city, state, and where you're from. I'm going to try to read those submissions. Yeah, you can include nicknames, too. We've been getting some fun ones as well. Jensen, what do you have today from one of those fine people?
Yeah, not a nickname, but just Jimmy from the Cape. Pretty straightforward. He said, hello, boys. Small email this week. There has been no greater bet recommendation on By the Books than the new Baywatch show reboot for must-see viewing. You are correct. Here on that one, Jimmy from the Cape. Again, Baywatch reboot coming in January on Fox. Dave, here are this week's questions for you. For the NFL this season, DraftKings is offering a market I have not seen in the past. More wins than... That is the market. More wins than. So one team more wins than another. Any sleeper team you like against anyone at odds. It's a great market. Possible layoff or let it ride moves as the season goes. Your opinion on my two step-ins. Here are the two that he's looking at, Dave, and we'll get your thoughts on it. The Jaguars at plus 165 over the Packers. That's the more wins than market. So the Jaguars plus 165 to have more wins in the season than the Packers. He says the Packer currently like going to grandma's. It's always cool, but squad needs to refresh decor. Jags have drafted better the last couple of years and it could show. And then he's pulling at your heartstrings here. The Dallas Cowboys plus 210 more wins than the Seattle Seahawks. Opportunity for a two game swing here as they play each other early December in Seattle, as the boys will have 10 days off from Turkey Day to prepare the week 13 look ahead. Cowboys +4.5 ATS and +$1.80 on the money line. So those are the two questions. Would you like Jaguars +165, more wins than the Packers, or would you like the Cowboys +210, more wins than the Seahawks?
I'm not sure what cape Jimmy is writing in from, but it's a very sharp cape. I'll put it that way. I think it's a really sharp play. If you're getting over 2-1 on the Cowboys at that price point against Seattle, we're talking about arguably the best division in football. We'll see what the Niners do become. But if the Niners are as tough as I think, Jensen, you and I believe they can be, got to get health, that's for sure. We know how good the Rams are going to be, right? We absolutely know that. You don't want to say that Seattle's third best in the division. They're the reigning defendings, and they've earned that right to have that distinction. But because the Cowboys, I think, are a team that you could play on this year, that if you're looking at a win total sitting at 8.5, 9.5, so if you like that over, it gets you to 10 right there. If Seattle just takes a slight step back from a year ago, it's really hard to repeat, as we know in this league anyway. So I do think there's a real outside shot that the Cowboys could win, dare I say, 11 games. And if you gave me that in pocket at +215 against Seattle, I think Seattle could have a nice season and go 10-7. And I don't think there'd be anything that's down about that. But you just have some of the attrition that we talked about, obviously, with the Super Bowl MVP now going to be running the football for the Chiefs. Can Sam Darnold be that good? He did have a lot of turnovers still last year. So maybe a little bit of regression on that side and maybe more positive steps for the Cowboys. Jimmy from the Cape, plus 215. I'd lock that in. On the other side of that equation with Jacksonville against Green Bay, Green Bay's got some issues as well early on the year. And again, that division could be a four-horse race in that if we do think Minnesota is taking a step up, we'll find out at the quarterback position, potentially with Kyler Murray. And yeah, that could suppress that win total a little bit there. The only problem or question I have is, did Jacksonville, I don't want to call it the luck box, but did they kind of get the better half of some of those games that could have gone against them a year ago? A really good year for Liam Cohen in year one. I don't know that they're a play-on team for me, but I can understand the idea, Jensen, of Green Bay being a play-against team. So at plus money, Jimmy, I think you're at least really centered in the right ideas here with those more than markets that are out there at some books. Take a look at those. Find that plus money. I really do like the Cowboys, though, at that price point much more than I do the first one with Jacksonville over Green Bay. Great submission. Jensen, what do you make of that? Because, again, you can find teams in that market that you definitely want to play against, and I think there are teams that I'd be looking in exactly that type of market.
Yeah, another way kind of correlated with win totals, right, is if you just don't want to have one, you can get the head-to-head, kind of parlays off of what you like to do round in, round out on some golf tournaments as well. He did throw in one question for me. He said, Jensen, if one believes the Yankees and Red Sox hold sway, you are looking at a situation where after the division winners, it is probably Cleveland, the White Sox, Twins, Rangers, Houston, Seattle and Baltimore, with only three of them moving on to the postseason. With the trade deadline Monday approaching, who do you believe will be the three wild card teams? Well, I have been on this show telling you that I think the Guardians are fugazi. I think their offense is fraudulent. I don't think they're going to be able to hold to be able to find one of those spots. So they're out for me. I think that the Mariners are still going to find their way in here, man. It is too good of a team. They're three games out of a playoff spot. That AL West, as we heard from CJ Nikowski, and I agree wholeheartedly, it is a crapshoot right now. Texas has had a couple of runs. Houston has made a great run, but I still think we'll hear from Seattle. Boy, that Yankees to miss the playoff price, Dave, it's like Ana de Armas, in one of the James Bond movies, just looking back at you, no time to die with it's getting more attractive by the day if this offense continues to sputter a bit and the back end bullpen gives away games they should win. But I think somehow, some way they find their way in here. Going to be very interesting to see after Monday. Let's put a pin in that question. After Monday, then we'll make some bold proclamations about who we think the wild cards are.
I want to give out one UFC play, and this is why we do the show. And again, please, shameless plug, check out First Strike with me and Rob Moreno each and every week. We're going to give out our best bets as well. It is hard to find a lot of value, as Lou Finocchiaro just alluded to here. I am going with Ludovic Klein this week, and I get Lou's rationale here with going with the underdog and the wrestler, but I'm going to go with the striker in Ludovic. He's been very profitable for me. I did pair him with Juras Medic in that main event. I do understand why some D-Rod people out there think he might be live the longer this fight goes. I just don't know how long it's going to go, Lou. Jensen. So to Lou's point there, maybe to start round two, you can get that $1.05. I think that's a fair price point for this fight to at least get to round two. But I think Medic's side is still the correct side. So I played Ludovic Klein and Juras Medic and parlayed that together at -$1.35 to try to knock that down ever so slightly. So, but I do understand the rationale that's why we have those opinions and those different ways and pathways to potential victory. But I'm going to be rolling with Ludovic and Medic there at -$1.35. Baseball plays, Jensen, anything that you've already added to the card or will be looking to add once you see lineups?
Yeah, just the one play on the under. I mean, we're going to go a little contrarian here on the Hunter Green and Paul Skeens, that Reds-Pirates matchup in Cincinnati. We'll play the under. We're going to kind of buck the trend here of where that total up from 7.5 to 8. I just think we'll get a little bit of relief there, and we'll kind of go against the market a little bit. Love the pitching matchup. Is this Hunter Green's final start in a Cincinnati Red uniform? Man, a name that has surfaced here just recently as a potential trade candidate, but just the one play we'll add throughout the day. Poolside and probably from the tee box, Dave. We might have some other bets to add later on today.
Dude, enjoy it. Happy belated to Michelle. You guys are doing it right. Hit them well, my friend. It's really exciting. Can't wait to see those pictures. Also want to give a shout out to one of our big fans and one of my best friends, Matt Redford, who loves this program. It is anniversary day for he and Katie, 22 years of wedding bliss, and I was honored to be at that wedding 22 years ago today, and I cannot wait, and hopefully they have 22 more or more coming here for Matt and Katie. So shout out to those guys back home in Virginia Beach. If you want to get more VSiN, and of course you do if you've been watching on FanDuel Sports Network, you've been watching on YouTube TV, all you have to do is go to VSiN.com and the VSiN Watch app. A numbers game is coming up next. It's been a lot of fun having Kelly Bidwin in there this week. We're going to have Gil back next week, but it's Dustin Swedelson, the big Swede, stepping in with Kelly today. That's next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.